Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
To station WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Larry marks 30 years at WGN.
Hey, that's great.
Starring Dave Plyer.
Who the hell is he?
And starring even more, Larry Potash.
Police in Oklahoma say they made a bizarre discovery when searching a woman in their custody. A drug-sniffing dog let officers know she needed to be searched. A female officer noticed the handle of a revolver sticking out from inside the woman.
It was a five-shot revolver. It was loaded, wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Who doesn't have that?
The old caboose pistol. Everybody has one.
What are you getting all worked up for?
It's Dave and Larry.
You're such a disappointing pair.
We're doing a show for regular people like you and me.
Larry and Dave.
We're award-winning broadcasters.
That's just a little humor.
All right, Dave Plyer in for Bob Surratt this morning. Ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't already know, Larry Potash is celebrating his 30th year at WGN-TV. 21 Emmy Awards later, a longtime dialect coach killing that Boston accent he had for so long. And here you are, Lynn's favorite son, Larry Potash, everybody. Congratulations. 30 years.
Thank you, Dave. It's good to be on the show. And it's hard to know what 30 years is when you're in your 20s, right? and here we are. And It's a message to the kids. It goes by quick.
You know, it's funny. Robin has told me before, like when she first started at GNTV, she would go past this board in the front of the building that would say Jody Lum, 10 years, 15 years, whatever it was. And she's like, who's ever at a job that long? Like, did you ever in your wildest dream?
Yeah, who's at a job for 30 years and who's at a job in TV on the same show for 30 years? I think these things just don't happen that much anymore.
Maybe Jack Benny.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
How's your summer been so far? Did you go see your mom out east?
Yeah. We shot out to Boston and Martha's Vineyard and touch base. I brought the kids and just a relaxing time to get away. And, you know, Boston accent maybe peeks out here and there after a couple of beers. But what are you going to do?
I love it. I was just telling my younger kids, by the way, you know, summer isn't over. You're just going back to school. Summer ends in September.
Yeah.
So us adults can still enjoy a little.
Right.
My son and his friend are in the studio and they give me the thumbs down.
Yeah.
But summer, you know, it just means you're back to school. It's still warm weather, we hope, for another month or so or whatever.
Yeah. And hey, kids, you know, I remember the interns would come in and they'd say, oh, gosh, I'm so busy. I'm like, really? How many toddlers do you have at home? I mean, be busy what, reading a book? I wish I could, you know, read a book.
Interns going out drinking.
College, I know it seems like a big deal at the time, but it's like kindergarten. Try paying your mortgage and saving for retirement. Now that's pressure.
That's very true. That's very, very true. You grew up in Lynn, studied at Emerson College. Speaking of college, at what age, like, did you even think about doing this? And what influenced you to do that?
You know what's weird is, in eighth grade, I was on this mission to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, and I thought every kid was doing that. and I liked history, and I liked English, and so I was geared towards journalism, and I, of course, played sports, and so I thought, hey, I'll be a sportscaster. That's a great gig. It's easy enough. And then you realize life doesn't start or end with a jump shot. So and covering a high school volleyball game in Longview, Texas is not quite as compelling as a Red Sox being in the 75 World Series.
Sure.
So, you know, I moved towards news, and it was the best move I ever could have made.
But was it always in broadcasting for you? Did you think about, you know, writing for the newspaper?
Yeah, no, because I, you know, you and I are of the MTV generation, and I did not have the patience for print. You know, that's... It's just you're getting. So you're often. Listen, I love it. I respect it. It's very important. But you know, as a writer, it gets into the weeds for me. Mm-hmm. I grew up on watching Hogan's Heroes and all this stuff that seems like a big waste of time unless you go into TV and then maybe there's some relevance to it all.
Yes, of course there is. So you had a premonition that newspapers would go out eventually.
I did not, but I could see. Yeah. I remember when I was writing for the Red Eye back, in the late 90s or early, or no, I'm sorry, it was the early 2000s. And I remember they said to the Red Eye, hey, can you make newspapers compelling for young people? And the guy would just tell me how the old school trib guys, like, they just could not get past the idea of. A newspaper has to be like this. It has to be this big. It has to fold 12 times and it has to have an insert into the insert. And it was so archaic, but they just could not see it.
Was there any influences in Boston or nationally that caught your attention, like in the broadcast world, that you're like, oh, that guy's pretty cool or that woman's pretty cool. I want to do what they're doing.
Well, we used to, we used to watch the local stations as people typically do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe this was on a subconscious level, that they just seem to be part of the community, which, at some point you realize you're not going to play for the Celtics or the Red Sox, and you think, like, this is maybe the next best thing, that you represent your community and be influential in your community by doing good stories.
Didn't you cover Boston Celtics practices?
In college.
It was
Bird
college.
And McHale. I cannot believe the Celtics let some college kids in. During the heyday of the Celtics.
Yeah, Larry Bird, really? I mean, that's pretty cool.
It was very cool. And I'm sure if I look back, our stories were not very impressive, but it gave us some confidence, that you're a kid willing to go up to Casey Jones. And, that's how you learn, and that's how you get ready to go to Longview, Texas and make minimum wage.
Oh, that's fun. Longview, Texas. And then it was Tulsa after that?
No. I had a stop in Evansville, Indiana in between.
Okay. How long were these stops? Was it a year or
two years? Yeah, I was 8 months in Longview, 14 months in Evansville, and then 3 years in Tulsa. These days, they hire kids to two-year contracts, so at least. So you couldn't, that would be difficult to do today, but listen, when you're making minimum wage, you're anxious to get to the next level.
Yeah.
And the learning curve sort of plateaus pretty quickly in market 135.
Yeah, right. Right, exactly. Exactly. So you're in Tulsa.
Yeah.
So how does WGN find you? Like, how did that whole thing work?
I think I saw the job opening on something called a newsletter.
Stop it.
Which was from the Radio Television News Directors Association. And I actually watched WGN on our cable, so I was familiar with it.
Yeah.
But honestly, I had never been to Chicago. I didn't really know what Chicago was. I thought it was an Indianapolis or a Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And all right, just another Midwestern town. But when I came here, it's just so impressive. I love it. People who come to visit love it. And I'm so thankful and fortunate that I ended up here.
Yeah, I was going to say, so at that time, and it was 1994, WGN decided to get out of the weekday children's TV business.
Yeah,
so you killed Bozo is what
right.
The bottom line is here. Bozo show goes to Sunday mornings, and now the WGN Morning News makes its debut September 6, 1994, Tuesday, because the telethon, the Jerry Lewis telethon was broadcast. But it was an hour. It was an hour-long newscast. So when you were there, you were doing more reporting? Were you doing any anchoring in the very, very beginning?
No, I was hired to be the hard news guy. And then at some point, Joni Lum was the Around Town feature reporter. And at some point, we started to kind of mix it up back and forth, maybe just to avoid burnout. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then after a year or so, they bumped me up to anchor. They just were moving in a different direction, and that's kind of when they, I think they realized the recipe they had was not working, and they Bill Weir came in, Paul Conrad came in, Robin was more full time, and that's when things really started to take off.
So did you have something like a scandal of sort on this Dave Eckert that you replaced?
No, I don't really, they moved him to the midday show and he was, for whatever reason, the people they hired were more just your basic straight-laced meat and potatoes news.
Yeah.
And that's not what you need to do. There were already five stations doing that.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do something different. And that's what happened to our big brother, KTLA in Los Angeles. They fell into that same trap. They fixed it, and we did it was the same story here. And, you know, fortunately, the people they assembled happened to be about the same age and the same sense of humor, and it was very natural and authentic at a time when those were not corporate buzzwords for media, so it worked.
I think Bob Surratt's morning show, he's doing mornings here now, like that was kind of a trendy little thing.
Sure.
And he was doing it off the cuff, and it was a little bit more natural. But you're right, like thank God for whoever cast and put all you guys together for the most part. I was like casting, but like put all you guys together, really, you had a feeling for one another, and y'all did have that same sense of humor, and I think that's what that chemistry really brought to the table, right?
Yeah, and while we like to think it was always that way, when we look at old tapes, we're reminded that it wasn't, and it took a little time to grow together, but you start to learn about each other, and so you don't have to fake it. And you know, one thing that we don't do on our show that they do on every other show in the United States of America is we don't small talk about the weather. I don't care about the weather.
Yeah.
I'm not chastising the weatherman because it's raining. That's the go-to ad lib for every anchor in America. It's not clever. It's not funny. It's not going to be funny. And so we try to stack the show in a way that gives us something to talk about.
Yeah. But I will tell you, with all the laughter that obviously people do during the show, you guys can also pivot very quickly to a breaking story. And I think that's why there's this immense trust there. There's immense joy in kicking off your morning watching you guys. But if you're going to turn to somebody when there is some breaking news and you want to get it first, you're going to go to GN, right? You're going to go to the morning news show.
Yeah, use the analogy of MASH, where you know you have these surgeons who are doing something very serious and they're cracking jokes. And why is it that way? Because that's real life.
Yeah.
And without getting into the deep psychology of it, but it's real life. And we realize, you know, one moment you can be having fun, the next moment, hey, there's something serious and we gotta go to work. And so I think that's what makes it authentic.
9/11 is a perfect example. And I think you were coming back from a trip or something. Like you couldn't get back for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. I was on a plane over the Atlantic Ocean on the morning of 9/11 and we got turned back to, we were stuck in England for about a week or so. I did some reports, some phone reports over there. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is largely before the internet age, and of course cell phones and so on, and nobody knew what was going on.
And you've been number one. I mean, and in the most coveted demographic for as long as I can remember. And I mean, you know, God, that's a place that only people, you know, hope they could be for a couple times during the year. And you guys have done it consistently for a very, very long time.
Yeah, well, thanks. And it's funny, once in a while, I will go and I will DVR one of the other stations. Or a number of the other stations, and I will kind of log, okay, what are they doing? What are their stories? How is their... Dave, nothing ever changes. They are all doing newscasts from 1978.
Yeah.
It's... And I'm like, keep it up, guys. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Helps us out. Yeah.
So...
Well, but WGN at times, and you know this over the decades, was not what those in the industry would consider the top of the news heap. Like, you know, Paul Conrad told me that if there was a crash in the parking lot, you guys would be the last to know about it, right? So,
yeah.
But now, decades now, it's really one of the most desired places to be, and it truly is.
It is. It really is a two-station market. You know, Channel 7 and us and everybody else is way, way... Not to say that the other stations don't do a good job, but in terms of rating and viewership, it's a two-person race. And, you know, the upside of WGN has always been it's a great place to work. It's a friendly place to work. You get the sense that, you know, the bosses generally care about you and your life. The downside is there isn't always that aggressiveness or competitiveness or, you know, accountability. And that's something that kind of goes up and down and struggles from administration to administration. But it's one of the things that I think separates the morning show is, you know, at least the anchors on our morning show are much to many people's headache that we are fighting. We are fighting for it to be better. And sometimes we, you know, we are trying to establish accountability, even though that technically is not my job. It's like, if I'm going down, I'm going down on my own. I'm not going down because I don't like what I see is going on around me.
But you are kind of the conscious of the morning news. I mean, you are. And I know you know, you'll send out ratings to people and show people where you're at on things and where there's opportunity. And somebody has to do that. And it has been you.
Yeah. I mean, you don't get to, you know, we didn't get to number one just by doing knock knock jokes and reading the teleprompter. I mean, it's a lot of work to really set a standard and say, this isn't good enough. We got to do it better. This is why this went wrong. Let's do it differently this time. And we're constantly pushing that.
Larry Podash, every day on the WGN Morning News, Monday through Friday, 6 to 10. Backstory weekends, mostly in the same time slot. thanks for your time today, pal. I appreciate it. And thanks, congrats Dave, on 3 decades of what you do best, Larry.
I appreciate your support. Thanks, Dave.